101.5 WORD, your station for John and Stephanie.
Hey, welcome back. Thanks so much for being with us this Monday afternoon. Happy President's Day to you, Stephanie Frischetti and John Hall. Hey, interesting show today. And coming up next, a wonderful interview. I got this through a fellow that we interviewed a few months ago about Bethlehem Christmas. Elia Hodge joined us, and he said, hey, there's a great new book out. You really need to talk to the author of this book. He has a lot of great insight. It's called The Crescent Through the Eyes of the Cross. And we are so happy today to have Dr. Nabil Jabbour with us, the writer of this book. It's insights, basically, from an Arab Christian. Dr. Jabbour, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Absolutely. So, you know, since you are an Arab, do you have a Muslim background? How did you come to know Jesus?
No, I don't have a Muslim background. Actually, as far as I know, my family goes back perhaps to first or second century Christianity. Christianity was around the Mediterranean. And then in the 7th century, Islam came. Many people became Muslims, but some families persevered through the centuries. And the Christianity that exists in the Middle East goes back to that time. I came to know Christ in my last year in high school. My parents put the fear of God in us, but they didn't know how to share with us the gospel or to articulate it clearly. My brother came as an international student to the States. And while in America, he came to know Christ. He went back to the Middle East, and he was the primary instrument in my coming to know Christ.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
So can you talk to us about the idea of Arab Christians? How many Arab Christians are there? Can you guesstimate something like that? And how safe is it to be an Arab Christian?
It varies from one country to another. And in some countries, it's, for instance, in Lebanon, it used to be 50%. Now it's maybe around 30%. In Egypt, it might be between 7 to 10%. But Egypt has a huge population. So that's why the number of Christian background people are relatively very big in Egypt. In countries such as Saudi Arabia, Christianity does not exist. So, but there most probably is an underground church.
And so I would imagine Christian Arabs undergo still a great deal of persecution.
Not necessarily.
No?
It depends upon, you know, kind of how well they relate to Muslims. Some get persecuted for Jesus' sake. Other people get persecuted perhaps for their self-righteousness.
So tell us about this book, The Crescent Through the Eyes of the Cross. Why did you write this book?
A few years ago, I was invited to participate in an important conference on Islam. And among other things, they asked me to describe the worldview of Muslims in 20 minutes. That was a challenge. I worked so hard on that assignment. And the more I worked on it, the more I came to the conclusion I shouldn't do it. I am a Christian. What if we invite a Muslim to describe his worldview? What would he say? So I created a fictional character, and I imagined him to be an international student coming from Egypt to the States. And while in America, he connects with Americans and builds some good friendships with some evangelicals who invite him to their homes and to their churches. And they witness to him. And one of them asked him the question, why is it so difficult for you Muslims to believe in Christ and get integrated into Christianity? He responds by saying, I have three problems, your message, you the messenger, and me the receiver. Under these three categories, I put 15 issues that describe the worldview of Muslims. The book, this particular presentation is found in chapter 2 in the book. The rest of the book unpacks and addresses all the issues that this international student raises.
Now, in this book, you talk about being careful not to have a Jonah attitude. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, you know, Jonah was invited by God to go to Nineveh and preach a message to the Gentiles. He didn't want to go. And then when finally God brought him there And God had mercy on these people after they repented. Jonah got mad at God. Actually, in Jonah chapter 4, verses 2 and 3, he says, "Is this not what I said when I was still at home? That's why I was so quick to flee to Tarshish. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love. Now take away my life." What does that mean? Mm. Let me paraphrase it, and I'll exaggerate a little bit for shock purposes. I think Jonah was saying something like this to God: "Lord, you know my heart, you know my commitment. I'm always willing to go with a message of judgment against the Gentiles, but I don't trust you because sometimes you tend to become mushy and compassionate. So when you wanted me to go to Nineveh, I didn't want to obey you. I went in the opposite direction. But you brought me by force, and here we are, and you're proving my point. I'd rather die." Mm. Now, I believe many times some Christians get tempted to demonize Muslims, to dehumanize them, and make it justifiable to hate them. And somehow we have the tendency to fall into the temptation of having a Jonah attitude. Mm. I address that issue in a chapter in my book.
Do you mean that we don't want to, Christians don't want to evangelize the Muslims because we don't think that God is going to be in it? Or I'm not catching that completely.
Okay. It's not we do not want to evangelize them. We want to do the evangelism without compassion, proclaiming the message. And if they respond, that's fine. If they don't, we wash our hands of the responsibility and feel like, okay, we did it, let them go to hell.
Did God
love us that way? Did he throw the gospel to us from heaven like a basketball and hope that we will catch it?
Yeah.
Or God visited our planet and we saw him in Jesus Christ?
Huh. Yeah.
Okay, you make the point that, of course, Jesus died for Muslims too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he nurtures us. He doesn't just say, "Hey, you want this? No? Okay, fine. Have it your way."
That's right.
So, Dr. Jabbar, how do you go about this then? How can you approach this in a compassionate, sensitive manner?
I want to send you a book as a gift, and there's no short answer to this very good question.
Well, I'll tell you what, we do have the information for the book on our website for those that want to dig deeper. And, of course, we never have enough minutes to unpack all of this in a 13-minute interview. But if you could explain to us today, there's not just one type of Muslim in the world. There are several. So can you tell us about the different types of Muslims that are in the world?
Yeah. There are, this is oversimplification, but I think it's good enough. There are 7 main types of Muslims in the world today. The first one is what is called folk Islam. The second type is what they call Orthodox Muslims. The third group is secular or cultural Muslims. The fourth type is what is called ambivalent Muslims. The fifth type is what is called contented Muslims. The sixth type is what is called mystics. And the seventh type is what is called fundamentalists. If you like, I can give you a brief description of each of them.
Sure, if you could. We have just a couple of minutes left, but that would be interesting.
Okay, folk Islam is the religion of the poor and the uneducated. They are in abundance all over the Muslim world. These people are gripped by fear of the demonic and fear of death. Mm. Orthodox Islam is the religion of those who know their religion and their theology well. They are in abundance in the Arab world, and especially in Egypt, because Cairo has the most prestigious Muslim seminary in the world. Third group is the secular or cultural Muslims, like we have cultural Christians who go to church on Easter, on Sunday, and on weddings and funerals. There are Muslims like that. Mm-hmm. They see themselves as the open-minded Muslims. These people used to be the powerful people before the 1920s. Now their role is diminishing for various reasons. Ambivalent Muslims are the Muslims that don't care for the theology or the doctrines. All they care for is that Islam gives them an identity, like people in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, etc. Contented Muslims are the Muslims that feel blessed that they were born in Muslim families. They believe there are only three true religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. They believe Christianity was an improvement on Judaism and Islam was an improvement on Christianity. Then you have the mystics, people who have fallen in love with God, and everybody knows about the fundamentalists.
Yeah, the fundamentalists are what we are worried most about here as far as the terror goes in the United States.
Yeah, and they get the headlines, and we forget about all the others.
Yeah. Dr. Jabbour, we sure do appreciate you being with us today. And I know that this is one of your most recent books that you have out. But real quickly, before we have to let you go, what are some of the other books that you have written? And we can let our listeners know about those.
I've written another book recently called Unshackled and Growing. And people can get it from Nav Press as well as my book at the number 1-800-366-7788. I've written also a book on Islamic fundamentalism called The Rumbling Volcano and a book on spiritual warfare called The Unseen Reality. Mm. People can access my website and look for these books.
Yeah, and Dr. Jabbour, we will have your website up on ours. So it's important to know about Islam on so many different levels. First of all, to know what we're up against and that there's not just one type of Muslim. And secondly, that if we are trying to evangelize, we know where these folks are coming from and we have to look on them with compassion like Jesus does.
That's right.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Nabil Jabbour. The name of the book is The Crescent Through the Eyes of the Cross. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.